crazy guy with some nuclear weapons. It's like poking a rabid dog with a stick, isn't it? It's not real smart. He's not real smart, of course. Now, there was brief mention last night in one of the phone calls about this horrific abortion bill that has passed the House. There we go, that's better. This, and it is, it's awful. It makes criminals out of people who try to help little girls and young women in arguably a terrifying time of life. And, of course, you know, there's a procedural thing in the House of Representatives, and, you know, it happens in the Senate as well, where one attempts to amend a bill in such a way as to make it unpalatable. And just when you think the Republicans can't get any more disgusting, they up the ante. They up the ante. This from Raw Story. Democrats in the House are absolutely furious over what they see as a deliberate attempt by Republicans to rewrite Democratic amendments to make the Democrats' amendments look preposterous. So what happens is a description of an amendment will be posted. For instance, in the past, I think we got a telegraph going in the background here. Sighted sub, sank same. In the past, for instance, here's how it would look. This is from the Congressional Record about the same bill when it came up in 2002. Number 18, an amendment was offered by Mr. Scott to require a finding of significant federal interest and insufficiency of state laws before prosecution pursuant to this bill. The amendment was defeated by a voice vote. Number 19. An amendment was offered by Ms. Jackson Lee to exclude grandparents from the prohibitions of this bill. The amendment was defeated by an 8-16 roll call vote. You see how it works. Well, look at what these filthy, filthy, filthy Republicans have done now. I mean, every time you think that you can't be stunned at their mendacity, you up and get stunned again. Legislators said on stun, Mr. Spock. These are amendments that were offered and voted down by recorded votes in the Judiciary Committee markup of H.R. 748, the Child Interstate Abortion Notification Act. Okay. So here's the description of the amendment. A Nadler Amendment allows an adult who could be prosecuted under the bill to go to a federal district court and seek a waiver to the state's parental notice laws if this remedy is not available in the state court. The amendment lost 16-11. The GOP then turned around and rewrote it. Listen to what they turned it into. Mr. Nadler offered an amendment that would have created an additional layer of federal court review that could be used by sexual predators to escape conviction under the bill. Here's another one. A Nadler amendment to exempt a grandparent or adult sibling from the criminal and civil provisions in the bill. The amendment failed, 19-12. Here's what the GOP rewrote it into. Mr. Nadler offered an amendment that would have exempted sexual predators from prosecution under the bill if they were grandparents or adult siblings of a minor. A Scott amendment to exempt cab drivers, bus drivers, and others in the business of transportation profession from the criminal provisions in the bill. It lost 17-13. GOP rewrite. Mr. Scott offered an amendment that would have exempted sexual predators from prosecution if they are taxi cab drivers, bus drivers, or others in the business of professional transport. You get the idea that these filthy-minded, the perverted Republicans have sexual predator on the brain? Could that be because so many sexual predators exist within their ranks? People like the BTK serial killer? People like the kiddie porn disc jockey in Nashville? The National Boy Scout leader who enjoyed swapping kiddie porn. They're obsessed with it. And as I've said in the past, where people like that godforsaken hate monger James Dobson are concerned, he'll get the Billy James Hargis. He'll come to that end someday. He'll be caught with a live boy or a dead girl in a motel room somewhere. Because they're sick. They're perverts. They're nobody you'd want to leave your children around, Republicans. And of course, I heard this missing woman near the runaway bride, so to speak, near Duluth, Georgia. We know how that one's going to come out, don't we? She disappeared, and right before her wedding, all of her stuff was still there. You know, had some aspects of Chandra Levy about it, I guess. And they say the erstwhile groom has passed a private lie detector test, but of course refuses to take a police-administered one. I don't blame him for that. But then I heard what told me all I needed to know about the case. I'm speculating, but I feel fairly confident this man is probably the murderer. Because I heard on ABC's Top of the Hour news today, a neighbor or a friend saying, and this is what she said, "Well, he's a Sunday school teacher, and he attends church regularly." Guilty. He's a killer. That's what they do. So, watch and wait on that one. He'll crack, he'll lead him to the body. And I don't understand how such a good Christian man could do that. Well, as soon as we quit applying the word Christian to these right-wing religion industry fascists, we will begin to understand, because there is nothing in their beliefs or their teachings that has anything to do with the life of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. So we got all that before us and oodles more, too, on this Friday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Andre Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
My name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
In Lancaster, a little league coach gets his team to the big game. In Ventura, a volunteer firefighter orders herself out of bed at 4 a.m.
In Peoria, a CPA joins the PTA.
In Nashville, an aspiring songwriter joins the Naval Reserve.
People across America are giving back to their community and their country. The Naval Reserve is proud to include these individuals among our ranks. Together, we will build a better world. Call 1-800-USA-USNR or go to NavalReserve.com. Naval Reserve, stay strong.
Back to radio for the rest of us. Head on.
Welcome back. 20 minutes after 7 o'clock, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Let's see. A little something for you. I want to share one more of these rewrites, a couple of them. Let's see. The Democrat amendment, a Scott amendment that would have limited criminal liability to the person committing the offense in the first degree. And lost 18 to 12. How did the Republicans rewrite it? Mr. Scott offered an amendment that would have exempted from prosecution under the bill those who aid and abet criminals who could be prosecuted under the bill. Oh, brother. A Jackson Lee amendment to exempt clergy, godparents, aunts, uncles, or first cousins from the penalties in the bill. GOP rewrite. Ms. Jackson Lee offered an amendment that would have exempted, there it is again, these dirty, filthy-minded Republicans, would have exempted sexual predators from prosecution under the bill if they were clergy, godparents, aunts, uncles, or first cousins of a minor. Now, Representative Louise Slaughter, a Democrat, a decent human being from New York, she's the ranking Democrat on the House Rules Committee, she said, "The Rules Committee discovered yesterday that the Judiciary Committee report on this very bill, which was authored by the majority staff, contained amendment summaries which had been rewritten by committee staff for the sole purpose of distorting the original intent of the authors. This committee report took liberty to mischaracterize and even falsify the intent of several amendments offered in committee by Democratic members of this body. At least five amendments to this bill, which were designed to protect the rights of family members and innocent bystanders from prosecution under this bill, were rewritten as amendments designed to protect sexual predators from prosecution and were then included in the committee report as if that was the original intent of the authors. The thing is, sexual predators were not mentioned anywhere in any of these amendments. I asked the chairman of the Judiciary Committee about this deception yesterday afternoon at the Rules Committee hearing," she says, "and instead of decrying what I certainly expected would be revealed as a mistake by an overzealous staffer, the chairman stood by those altered amendment descriptions. He made very clear to the Rules Committee that the alterations to these members' amendments were deliberate. When pressed as to why his committee staff took such an unprecedented action, the chairman immediately offered up his own anger over the manner in which Democrats had chosen to debate and oppose this unfortunate piece of legislation we have before us today. In fact, he said, and I quote, 'You don't like what we wrote about your amendments, and we don't like what you said about our bill. Nyeh, 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 nyeh. I'm going to pound my fist on the table and kick my feet and hold my breath till I turn blue.'" Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York said, "This is truly outrageous and a gross abuse of power. The authors of this report suggest that they described my amendment in accordance with its possible effect, but if that's true, consider this. Under the bill, a father who..." Okay, listen, yeah, he turned it on them, you see. The name of the bill, again, is the Child Interstate Abortion Notification Act. The acronym is CIANA. "Under CIANA, a father who rapes and impregnates his own daughter can go and sue the doctor or the grandparent or the clergyman who transported his child across state lines for the purpose of getting an abortion. Maybe that wasn't exactly the intent of this legislation, but according to the descriptive guidelines now laid out by the majority, it would therefore be fair to call this entire bill the Rapists and Sexual Predators' Right to Sue Act." The Republicans are trying to determine which words the Democrats get to use to describe their own amendments. What next? They get to write our speeches? Well, Congressman Nadler, they'd like that. In fact, if they could just stuff a tennis ball in every Democratic congressman's mouth and run a little duct tape around your head, that would be the best of all possible worlds. That's effectively what this filthy Republican Congress has done in the first place. You do remember about the debate on H.R. 1? the Medicare prescription drug boondoggle when Democrats were utterly muzzled and excluded from the debate? You remember that, don't you? Of course you do. Completely shut out from the process, the minority party was. So, yeah, I wasn't kidding last night when I said that this hateful bill thinks more of incestuous, rapist, adult male relatives than it does of little girls whose lives hang in the balance. But, of course, you know, good, godly, upstanding, right-wing, filthy religion industry Republicans, no, that little 12-year-old girl needs to have her daddy's baby. Because Jesus wants her to. And then maybe we can take it with its big ears and buggy eyes and put it up for adoption somewhere. Maybe it can learn to play the banjo and work in the road company of deliverance. Now, that's cruel on my part, and I'm ashamed that I said it. But that's what we're dealing with. That's what you're dealing with when you look at what these godforsaken Republicans do to our constitutional processes. It would make Washington and Franklin and Adams and Madison weep to see the perversion of the Constitution that is perpetrated on a daily basis by these filthy pigs. This is not the government they taught me about in civics class. Well, it kind of is. Only it wasn't taught to me as being the American government. This is a lot closer to what I was taught the Soviets were like. You remember them, the Soviets, the bad guys, the godless commies. That's what we have in the Republican Party. Totalitarian, fascist-flavored, oligarchically inclined pigs. Down to the last one. Good God, they passed a bill to make little girls have rape babies. Oh, it's enough to make you wish that there really was a very hot, very burning hell, so you could at least have the confidence of knowing that they would go there someday. But that's just the way things are, and what we wind up having to do, well, we'll either let them get away with it, or we will oppose them. Nah, let's sing Kumbaya instead. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Directs new funds and new focus to the task of collecting vital intelligence on terrorist threats and on weapons of mass production.
Head On.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. Tourism will be the main focus at Crossroads Mall this weekend. Mall and the Southern West Virginia Convention and Visitors Bureau will host the second Southern West Virginia Travel Expo tomorrow and Sunday. The event showcases attractions and also tourism-related business from the 9-county area served by the Bureau. The Bureau's president, Doug Matty, says they remind area residents about all the great tourist attractions that are close to home.
We've got a lot of things to do in our region that unfortunately those of us that live here sometimes overlook. And this will showcase what there is to do, how to plan your vacation locally, and help also to promote the Crossroads Mall, obviously. And it's an awareness campaign, if anything else.
Representatives from the lodging and outdoor recreation industries are expected at the weekend expo. Mall traffic during the expo weekend is expected to be about 33,000 people. Goal for the expo is to give local residents information to share with friends, family, or business acquaintances who may be coming to Southern West Virginia this year. There won't be any motorcycle riding for a while for Governor Manchin. The governor recently underwent outpatient surgery to correct a hernia. He was back at the mansion 4 hours later and appears well on his way to full recovery, but doctors told him to stay off the motorcycle for 4 to 6 weeks. Mansion's press secretary, Tom Hunter, says he's frustrated because it's spring and he's ready to get riding again. The doctor's orders mean that Mansion will be grounded through May, possibly all the way through Memorial Day. Humane officials have confirmed a second case of rabies in Summers County within 6 months. A raccoon found in the west end of town Tuesday tested positive for the disease. Humane officials are urging residents to make sure their pets' rabies vaccinations are up to date and to watch for any animal that acts suspiciously. Rabies is becoming a problem in several counties in southern West Virginia. That's the news. Now here's the forecast. For the rest of this evening, cloudy, showers, possible thunderstorms. During most of the night, as a matter of fact, not quite so cool tonight with a low near 50. Saturday, showers and thunderstorms likely most of the day. Daytime highs near 60. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
AFL-CIO President John Sweeney has produced a comprehensive set of reforms for the International Labor Federation that includes plans to help unions organize more workers, to revamp union member mobilization, creating a permanent culture of activism, and to rebuild state and local labor movements, all aimed at building power for working families. Sweeney says there will also soon be a restructuring of AFL-CIO staff that could mean layoffs.
We are moving forward with plans to reorganize our staff and budget to reflect these priorities.
The ultimate shape of AFL-CIO reform will be decided at its July convention in Chicago. In response to Sweeney's announcement of reform proposals, a joint statement by presidents of the SEIU, Teamsters, Laborers, Unite Here, and the UFCW said that, quote, while there is universal agreement on the need to win for working families, there remains a striking difference in beliefs about what workers can achieve, end quote. That statement said that as leaders of some of the largest affiliates of the AFL-CIO, these union presidents believe that uniting workers who are not yet in unions must be at the top of labor's agenda, and they renewed their call on Sweeney to provide complete information on the AFL-CIO's programming and operational budget.
From George Washington University to University of Mary Washington, students are demanding that service workers on their campus receive living wages and better working conditions. Now that fight is heating up on the campus of Washington, D.C.'s Howard University, a historically black college. Selena Masuta of the D.C. Radio Co-op reports from the District of Columbia.
Irene Schwefferman, a staff member at United States Student Association and a Howard University alum, what is happening at Howard represents a long history of student struggle.
The workers' rights movements down in Tennessee and all those things that kind of spurred and sparked the civil rights movement, those are the things that we've been fighting for historically as a community. So we're learning that these are the same things that were fought for in the civil rights movement and that have been fighting for time and time and time again. So for it to hit us here at home, it's just kind of, again, proving the point that we still have so much to overcome as a community.
After 6 months of negotiating, the president of Howard, H. Patrick Swigert, has only offered a 2% increase. Selena Masuta, Workers Independent News in Washington, D.C.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to the Labor Research Association, George W. Bush's $2.57 trillion budget for 2006 increases military spending by 4.8%, not including the war in Iraq, and cuts all other federal government programs, with the deepest cuts aimed at services for working Americans and the poor. His tax cuts that primarily benefit the affluent will add $10 trillion to the deficit over the next 20 years. The LRA says Bush's budget shifts resources to the military while shifting the tax burden to the working class. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
WWNR Beckley.
Radio for the real majority. Head on.
Welcome back. Oh, let's see. Yeah, 25 minutes before 8 o'clock. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Story I'm going to get to in a minute. I'm going to have to work up to it. Another one of those tragic things. Ben Birch just sent it to me. I read it during the break. Oh, brother. Let's go to the phones first. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're Head On. Jim.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. You?
Oh, reasonably well. Well, Governor Massey can't ride his motorcycle, huh?
I reckon not.
Well, I guess he has to ride something else for a while.
Oh, brother.
I didn't mean to.
No, that's okay.
There.
That's okay. All right.
On this Senate Bill 677, the Workplace Religious Freedom Act.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's sponsored initially by Mr. Santorum, John Kerry, Mr. Ensign, Joe Lieberman,
of course,
Brownback, Hillary Clinton, Mr.
of course,
Smith, Chuck Schumer, Mr. Talent, Corzine, and Coburn, and Hatch.
Oh.
Now, it's a strange thing. Ostensibly, this bill had its origin or the reasons for it being generated in that two Catholics were discharged from a place where they worked because of some type of Christmas Eve scheduling problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what that was. And can't really speak to that authoritatively, but apparently when I asked the people in Santorum's office today, and by the way, the number is 202-224-6324, and that's area code 202-224-6324,
mm-hmm.
And the point of contact for this action is a guy named Bob. When I asked, I said, how would this impact upon the dispensation of birth control medication by pharmacists? And it was explained to me, and I'm not very good at recanting these explanations, but the store has to employ more than 15 people,
mm-hmm.
And if there is one pharmacist on duty and, say, a tech, and that pharmacist does not want to fill the prescription,
mm-hmm.
then he has to fill it. But if there are two pharmacists on duty, which very rarely is the case,
true,
then the pharmacist who does not wish to fill it doesn't have to, but the other one does.
Well, what happens if both of them are freaks?
I knew you'd ask that, and I asked you back then, and they couldn't answer that.
Well, you know, the woman just has to get pregnant and have the baby like Jesus wants them to.
I said,
you know,
what happened if, you know, if all of them.
Right.
Or if they just don't want to bother with the prescription, and just say it's because of their religious beliefs. And I said, you know, I can't understand why people want to be so intrusive, or the government wants to be so intrusive in all these things, which really are not at the benefit of the consumer. I said, look what you did to overtime last year. I mean, that was a real lovely thing. Well, the two are not related. And I said, well, yeah, they are related. They both impact on how things are going in the workplace and who can do what and who can't do what and who can be served and who can't.
Well, you know, this is kind of sad because they're trying to create a law, Jim, that will let people, I mean, first, I'm going to try to organize my thoughts here. First, one cannot claim that if one went to pharmacy school, one had no idea that one might be called upon to fill a prescription for birth control pills. Do you think?
Oh, of course. Naturally.
It's not like the technology is new. I mean, my God, when was Griswold versus Connecticut decided?
A long time ago.
The pill has been around for a while. And two, do you realize that we have put pharmacists on a pedestal above doctors?
I tried to explain that to these people, but they could not grasp that idea.
The doctor writes the script, and the pharmacist gets to pass moral judgment or supplant his or her freakish religious views on the medical decision made by a licensed practitioner in the course and scope of their profession.
Ostensibly and effectively, yes. That's what it's really coming down to. And I don't know what in the world possessed all of these people to coalesce with someone like Santorum.
Well, look.
And I just,
Hillary,
you know,
Hillary, I resisted believing this for quite some time, but I'm coming around to it. Hillary wants to run in 08. We know John Kerry intends to run in 08.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Lieberman's a Republican. It doesn't surprise me at all one way or the other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I wish to heaven some real Democrat would run against him in the primaries next year in Connecticut. So that's but the worst part of this, Jim, and I think I've commented on it in the past, the worst part of this is that poor Hillary and poor dumb John don't understand that they could, if they wrote the very bill that overturned Roe versus Wade and amended the Constitution and went out and sewed up every pregnant woman's legs in the country, if they did that, they would not get one single extra vote from these religion industry hate mongers, these evangelo fascists.
Well, I tried to explain to them that they were simply causing people who believed in them, Senator Kerry and people like Mrs. Clinton, and who would have supported them, that they're really eroding their own power base when they do stuff like this.
Sure. I mean, why should a progressive vote for John Kerry or Hillary Clinton, knowing that they're going squishy on their own values?
Well, the girl in charge of this action in John Kerry's office, and if you want to read why Kerry wrote the bill, it's right there with kerrysenate.gov, you know,
mm-hmm.
Email or web address, okay? But she was enthused, and but then when I started asking her specific questions about tube pharmacists and things of that nature, and the ramifications of this bill, and how it's going to affect their power base, it's just like I was speaking gibberish. They just couldn't comprehend what I was trying to say.
And, you know, I think...
And I just said, well, you know, tell Senator Kerry that I have written, he's lost a very, very, very loyal supporter.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, if we have to pair the... Jim, I'm willing to... If we have to pare the party down to its core and regrow it, that's fine by me, because we can do it rather quickly. You know, now that the wheels are off the Bush economic miracle and we see him for who he really is,
mm-hmm.
The wheels are going to come off his little wagon.
I don't think he did very well last night. Do you?
Oh, he was atrocious. I watched reruns when I got home. He's just pitiful. If he wasn't such a monster, you would just your heart would go out to somebody like him. I mean, he's telethon material.
He's what?
He's
telethon material.
He's telethon material.
Well, you know, Bob, they all are.
I mean,
you hear some of the people around here on the radio, and you hear them enthused about George Bush still, and you hear them enthused about. They want this, they want that, they want better this, better this, better this, better that, this, that, and the other. And, you know, the morning show host and his co-host. I mean, when you hear these people get up there and try to defend those very same positions, you know, really, it goes beyond the gag reflex.
Oh, I know. I tell you what, if you want a really interesting, scintillating read, Jim, there is an article banging around on the Internet out there. I think I found it at truthout.org. Called What's the Matter with Liberals?
Well, you know, Jethro this morning, and I just happened to catch him, used a term that Steve O'Brien was in an alternative reality. And, you know, there's one thing I love about Jethro. He's basically like a metronome. And, you know, he's basically, you know, he can't be dissuaded by these lofty goals or whatever, or their rhetoric.
Oh, his.
He just comes back to them, and he's just relentless to the point that he has O'Brien, you know, almost in a state of near apoplexy.
Well, I've heard him. I've heard him on some occasions in the morning when I happen to be up and about, and it's in many ways. Jethro is like listening to a really, really good lawyer on cross-examination.
Well, he basically builds his arguments, and, you know, it's sequentially developed. It's logical, and the other person's isn't. And they can't stand it, and then they have to start screaming.
Well, you'll hear it sometimes on this show, too. I'll have a wingnut pinned to the mat, and they'll try to change the subject and slither away. And try to drag them back, and they slither off. And after a while, I get tired of it.
Well, I know. You just say, listen, I got to roll on, or just don't call here again. I can understand your frustration.
But there are nights when it's like, there are other nights, though, when it's like an alley tomcat just sitting there smacking a mouse.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
Fun, too.
Well, I can imagine, but I mean, when these people, and well, the thing, they're not even remotely transparent. They are remotely opaque. They are so transparent in what they're, you know, what they want to do.
No, you can see the neon flashing greed in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last night with Boy George there. What kind of gall does it take to you know, spend 60 days going around the country saying, your benefits won't be cut, and then just stand up in front of America and say, I want to cut your benefits?
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
How did he say this? He just said that? He just said that, period?
Now, he wants means testing for Social Security, Jim. He wants means testing.
Which is?
Well, we're going to give Social Security to the poor people, but you middle class, you can go screw yourself. Really? Not in so many words, but...
I see.
Yeah, really.
Well, you know, I think that he is not going to get his way with this. I really don't see how his plans can really come to fruition, because that's the reason that he did the very... thing that he hates to do the most, and that is to come before a live audience for the American people. And even if he has people who are plants out there to ask him questions, he still has such a fear of speaking in public and trying to defend what is almost indefensible. I mean, I don't know who has the worst problem in addressing crowds, the late George VI or him. And, you know, he had a terrible speech impediment. But George Bush has, in my opinion, you know, has some type of brain impediment.
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely without a doubt. I remember from the campaign, our enemies never stop thinking about ways to harm America, and neither do we.
Well, he was right. That may be a Freudian slip, because that's exactly what he's done.
Oh, it's not a Freudian slip. It's an entire Freudian chemise. I mean, the guy is, and the whole thing last night, sitting there poking a stick at the rabid dog that is North Korea, you know, just trying to goad him into nuking somebody. Man, my God.
You know, Bob, I'll tell you something. This is like a replay of the Manchurian Candidate. These people could not hurt this country more than if they were in pay of a foreign power who wanted to destroy it.
Well, I think...
You know, sometimes maybe they are.
They are in the pay of a foreign power, or two, or three. Saudi Arabia, Communist China, sure.
Well, you know, obviously they're earning their money.
You know, all those American jobs didn't just get up and sneak off to China in the middle of the night. They had a lot of help.
Yeah, they sure did. They certainly did. Absolutely.
You know, so whether it's Social Security or Iraq, I mean, have you noticed, Jim, for God's sakes, Ahmed Chalabi is the number two man in Iraq now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's the deputy prime minister in charge of the oil ministry.
Well, didn't the first one had to quit or decided it would be healthier if he did quit?
I'm not entirely certain, but, you know, this is the guy we paid $346,000 a month to hook us up with people like the guy that was codenamed Curveball. You know, the drunk Iraqi scientist hanging out under a bridge over the Euphrates somewhere.
Oh, right.
Drinking screw top wine, spodiote, and you know, calling in intelligence reports to the Germans. And the Germans finally got to the point where they said, "They think this man is patently insane, and you would be insane as well to pay attention to him." At which point, you know, Condoleezza Rice and that crowd said, "Oh, that's wonderful."
And they began immediately not only to pay attention to him, but take what he said for his gospel, because it suited their, it suited their end.
Right, and it's, post hoc ergo propter hoc reasoning, you know, after this, therefore because of this. What can you call it, Jim? But faith.
It's taking logic and standing as we said, and it's also called lying.
Yeah, and faith-based foreign policy. You know, we believe that Saddam has an evil Martian death ray, and you go out and find us the intelligence to prove it.
You know, I'll tell you something. I don't think even Joseph Goebbels, Hitler's propaganda minister, the author of the big lie, or any of the Soviet people in the Kremlin who were responsible for misinformation could do a better job than some of these people are. I really believe that, and I hate it. I really hate it for the sake of...
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I'm not trying to be mean to anybody.
No, no,
I'm
I understand. No, I mean, the old... some of the old TASS and Pravda apparatchiks would be, if they could look at what's going on over here today, they would say, "We are watching Master at work."
Yeah, really. I mean, it's just incredible what they say. I mean, and honestly, I don't know how in the world they can get in these positions of, getting a public platform and say some of the stuff they're saying that are just so patently untrue. They can't be proven, and, you know, they're just baseless rhetoric.
Well, they say it because they can. They say it because they can get away with it, because their base, and remember, the Arabic word for base is al-Qaeda, their base does not demand proof. Their base demands only that you tell them Jesus said so, and they'll go, "Okay, we'll follow now. Yes, master," and their eyes get big and sort of look like, the coffee cup saucers, and they get that sort of Reverend Moon face about them, and they bleat like the little sheep they are a couple of times, and they get in line, and then the next thing you know, they're protesting in Florida demanding that a feeding tube be stuck back in a brain-dead woman. That's the people they're dealing with, Jim. That's why they don't have to fool with logic. And the rest of us, the thinking people, the reality-based people, Jim, we're an afterthought. We don't even count.
Gosh, I feel like a dinosaur.
Well, yeah, there's, yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah, now on the...
I mean, obviously no one's wearing me this year because logic's gone out the window. Not that I'm the most logical person in the world. I'm not pretending to be.
Oh, logic's the new Edsel now. I mean...
Really? Really, it is. I mean, honestly,
you know,
this just, and you know, Bob, when you talk to these people, you get one of these staffers on the line, and they're the proponent for that particular piece of legislation. Half of them don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Oh, half of them couldn't tell a syllogism from a sweet roll. Okay, I mean that's what we're dealing with.
And, you know, basically, these young people who are staffing these offices are there. You know, they're on a grace and favor appointment, you know. They
mm-hmm.
serve with the pleasure of. And they're there so they can find something else to move on. They get, you know, they think that it's just part of, you know. And, you know, the thing that they can do the best is either to give you some type of "I don't know," or they'll try to switch you to somebody else. Now, when I called originally this afternoon, I was switched into the Senate Foreign Relations Committee when I was supposed to be switched to Mr. Kerry's office. I mean, they can't even transfer telephone calls properly.
Well, you know, my favorite thing lately, Jim, and I mentioned, I don't know if you heard me mention it a couple of nights ago, there is a new way to reach the Capitol switchboard, and it's not a joke. I had to test it for myself. Rather than trying to look around and go on the internet and find this office and that office, all you got to do is pick up the phone. I'm not kidding. Pick up the phone and punch in 877-SOB-USOB. And bang, you're in the Capitol switchboard.
You're kidding.
No. 1-877-SOB-USOB.
You mean just the letter U?
Yeah. SOB-USOB.
877-SOB-USOB.
Yeah.
That's just, oh well, I mean, you know.
You know, when I finally make my billions, I'm gonna I'm on my 100,000 acres, God, or my little private island, I'm building a temple to the God of Irony.
Well, you know, just when you think the strain has reached the heights of its fulfillment, new wonders indeed appear.
Yeah, and you know, my temple to the God of Irony, I'm gonna have something like, you know, like an ancient Zeus or a Thor or an Odin, only he's going to have his right hand lifted with his thumb against the end of his nose, and that's what that statue's going to look like.
It would have to. It would definitely have to.
Yeah,
basically, what they need to do, they need a new monument.
Yeah.
In Washington, a monument to stupidity. And basically, what they need to do, they need to, you know, maybe put it near the reflecting pool, a big statue just like that. Or better still, they could just have one with this, with, you know, kind of like the Statue of Liberty, except with this thing extended.
Yeah.
Just give everybody the bird.
Yeah, just remember, Jim, 877-SOB-USOB. Thanks, Jim.
Take care. Sir.
All right, time for the ABC Top of the Hour News. When we come back, a really gross and disturbing story. This is Head On.
In Florida prepare themselves for the hurricane season. Families in California prepare themselves for earthquakes. Every family in America should prepare itself for a terrorist attack.
This is a message from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, recorded by Secretary Tom Ridge. The topic, what you can do.
Not all Americans go to work every day in a department or a job that helps secure the country. We're not going to ask them to do that. We're going to ask them to do some simple things, like creating an emergency kit, a good communications plan. People might think it's insignificant, but if you take the time to develop that communication plan, to make that emergency supply kit, you will help to prepare America in the unlikely but still possible event that something could happen.
Learn to be prepared at www.ready.gov or call for a free brochure, 1-800-BE-READY. That's 1-800-237-3239. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Certain events are beyond your control, and you need to have some sort of plan in place with respect to your family members.
This is a message from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, recorded by Lai Sun Yi, New York City Office of Emergency Management. The topic, planning for emergencies.
I would say one of the most important things is to have some sort of communication plan in place, so there's, for your own peace of mind, you know that you're going to be able to contact your family. Also that you have enough water and food in your home in case you have to stay there for a while. We just want to have people know that there are things they can do to help themselves, to help their family members, to help their neighbors in the event something happens. And the important thing is to use common sense to remain calm.
Learn to be prepared at www.ready.gov or call for a free brochure, 1-800-BE-READY. That's 1-800-237-3239. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
A public service message from Call to Recycle.
Hi, this is Richard Karn. If you've got an old cell phone laying around the house, recycle it. It's easy, it's free, best of all, it's good for the environment. Learn more at calltorecycle.com. That's call, the number 2, recycle.com. Or call toll-free at 877-2-RECYCLE. Please, answer the call to recycle.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history. Independent Thomas. Peace Talk 620. WWNR. Beckley. 18 o'clock.
Welcome to the Lawn Care Show, Green and Growing, with John Deere's groundskeeping guru, Bill Pluto. Bill, I've been seeding, watering, and fertilizing, but my lawn's still not right. Don't I have the green thumb?
That thumb looks green to me. Sounds like you've done all the right things, so you should try a soil test.
So how do I go about testing my soil?
John Deere recommends taking several random plugs of soil from your lawn, removing any organic matter, including grass blades, roots, and stems, mixing the soil, and labeling it lawn. Then, send the lawn sample to a county extension agent, university turf specialist, or soil test lab. The lab technician will give you the pH of your soil so you can help give your lawn an A+.
Sounds like a soil test will help my lawn make the grade. Thanks, Bill. That's it for this edition of John Deere's Lawn Care Show, helping you keep your yard green and growing.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 8 o'clock, I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm going to share this story with you. It's sickening. But thanks still to Ben Birch for sending it to me. I don't know when we're going to realize what desperate, dire trouble we are in this country and who the cause of it is. But we'd better hope it's soon. This is breaking news out of Illinois. The mother of two children stabbed hundreds of times in their Hoffman Estates home was charged Friday with two counts of first-degree murder, according to authorities. Tanya Vasilev, 34, is expected to appear in bond court later. Hoffman Estate Police Lieutenant Rick Russo, or Russo, said there were signs that both Christian, aged 9, and Gracie, aged 3, struggled with their killer. Really doesn't get much worse than this, Russo said. Vasilev was at home with the children Wednesday night when her husband and the children's father, Nikolai, returned home to find the children stabbed, according to police. When the police arrived at the house on the 1100 block of John Drive, the 9-year-old boy was found just inside the door. Believing the offender was still in the house, the officers moved him into the front yard. There, officers began CPR and first aid, but realized, quote, he was past that, unquote. Officers searching the house found Tanya and Gracie, who was dead, 3 years old, on the second floor. The mother was found with minor cuts on her hands, though investigators do not believe she tried to kill herself. Police believe she attacked the children shortly before her husband returned home and called 911. That call came in at 9:20 p.m. last night. Another person who was living in the Vasilev home returned to the house with Nikolai Wednesday night. The roommate was questioned along with the parents but is not considered a suspect. Authorities believe Tanya Vasilev killed Gracie, 3, before chasing Christian through the house as he attempted. My God, let this roll around in your imagination a little bit. Before chasing Christian, aged 9, through the house as he attempted to hide. She caught up with him on the first floor where she attacked him. One law enforcement source said there were as many as 500 stab wounds and incisions on the two little bodies. Then a source at Cook County Medical Examiner's Office put the number at more than 100 on each child. Oh, well, that's okay then. What, not 500, 100. Russo declined to describe the scene inside the home, but he did say officers who got there first were offered counseling. Nikolai was released late Thursday afternoon, sources said. He could not be reached for comment. Rasen Spasov, a distant cousin of Nikolai who lives in Buffalo Grove, described Nikolai as Tanya as great parents who were always laughing and smiling, who took great joy in their children. About 5 years ago, June 2000, their three-month-old daughter, Gabrielle, died of carbon monoxide inhalation and burns. After a fire in the family's Elk Grove Village townhouse on Fox Run Drive, I'm sorry, I don't know how to make this, but Tanya told police at that time that she put the baby in a carrier on top of a clothes dryer because the machine's repetitive noise soothed her. He left Gabrielle alone to check on Christian, then four, and tried unsuccessfully to rescue the baby when she realized the laundry room was on fire. The police have reopened the death investigation, but they said they expected to be unable to reach a conclusion on the fire's origin because there was no new evidence. This spokesman at the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services said Thursday they had no contact with the family before the children's deaths. They seemed like nice people. Mike Metalone, Schaumburg, Illinois, said they were always friendly when you crossed their path. Randy Thaxton, administrator of Schaumburg Christian School, where Christian was a third grader, said he would see either Nikolai or Tanya weekly when they picked their son up from school. He himself visited the family in 2000 when they were grieving the death of Gabrielle. Since then, however, he said he hadn't seen any sign of unusual behavior. I personally don't know of any problems, Thaxton said. I didn't notice any difference in them from any other family. I don't know what kind of hope you can have after that, Bassoff said, but we believe there is hope that someday you'll see your relatives again and all be together. And now the relevant stuff. Tanya Vasilev is a native of North Carolina who studied at a Pentecostal college and taught Sunday school at the Bulgarian Church of God in Des Plaines, where her husband served as pastor until last fall. She told investigators she killed the children to save them from abuse she feared they would suffer at a new church. Pay attention. How many of these stories do we have to talk about before we realize what the religion industry is doing to this country? Industrialized religion, preying on the weak-minded, the pitiful, and the sick. Thursday's brutal scene on the quiet cul-de-sac stood in stark contrast to the friendly church-going family that friends and neighbors said they knew. They seemed like nice people, good Christian folks. They never ignored you if you said hello. They were always friendly when you crossed their path. 100 stab wounds in a 3-year-old little girl. Have the tears welled up in your eyes yet? They have in mine. 100 stab wounds in a little boy who had to be chased through the house before he could be butchered by his Pentecostal mommy, because she was afraid of abuse at a new church. Oh, and some of you are mad at me. There goes Bob picking on the Christians again. No, I'm not picking on Christians. Not at all. This isn't Christianity. Most of what passes itself for Christianity in this country has nothing to do with Christianity. Remember the other, that other religion industrialist in Texas who had to chase her children through the house before she could drown them in the bathtub? You remember that one? You remember the good religion industrialist who bashed her baby's heads in with a rock, stoned her children to death? There is a problem stalking this land. There is an evil stalking this land. There are agents of death stalking this land, and they market that death in the name of Jesus. and they kill and they raise money and they support war and torture. And they vote Republican as often as they can. And they are the greatest threat that America faces today. 1,000 times, nay, 10,000 times, 1,000 times more dangerous than Osama bin Laden could ever dream of being. My God. And it happens day in and day out. We never had any idea he could be the BTK serial killer. Why, he was an officer in our church. Church? Tricesto. Let's take our break. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm sad. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Send your visiting friends and relatives when they visit this year. Make plans to visit the Southern West Virginia Convention and Visitors Bureau's Travel Expo at Crossroads Mall April 30th and May 1st to learn about all the great attractions and activities right here in our own backyard. Southern West Virginia. Got it in you? Call 252-2244 for more information.
Listen, man. Added fractions is no big deal.
No?
No. You just gotta find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
And just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8 too. Then you add them up.
Maybe you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Tony Robbins. Usually I'm on stage in front of thousands of people working to help them change their lives. But today, if you have a friend or a loved one who's battling cancer, I'd like to ask you to take action in their support. How? Go to TalkingWellness.org, a place where you can find inspirational e-cards and free educational materials about cancer and coping with the side effects of treatment. To help empower somebody in your life who's battling cancer, visit TalkingWellness.org.
Sponsored by the Wellness Community with support.
A guy who's in no rush to be savage, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 20 minutes after 8 o'clock. Stories like that are like getting punched in the gut. I wish not one of those stories ever happened in this country. But people have preyed on these people's minds. And it is literally making our nation bleed. These charlatans who abuse the weak. And again, oh mercy, don't you wish for a burning hell? Yeah. That's not very Christian, Bob. Well, you know. Sometimes I'm weak. I'm human. And this woman will plead insanity or some such. 100 stab wounds apiece in a 9-year-old little boy who ran for his very life from a knife-wielding mommy who was trying to save them from abuse because they had to change churches. Better they had been pagans. Let's go to the phones. Brian's with us. Hey, Brian, you're head on. Yeah, Brian.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing good.
Just called in here to see where what you thought of Hillary now with her dramatic slide over toward the center on quite a few things.
Well, I don't think it's a slide toward the center. I think she's been there all along, Brian. You know, that it's the Hate Hillary First Club that thinks she's some sort of wild-eyed commie. You know, neither she nor her husband Bill were ever anything even approaching liberal. They were just called that for convenient purposes of demonization.
Her healthcare initiative was extremely liberal, Bob.
If by liberal you mean it would afford health care to every American, that's probably the most liberal. That they ever did. Yeah, okay.
Not every American don't have a copy of it, but have held it in my hand. When you got in the Roman numeral, I think it was Roman numeral 4, capital letter A, little Roman numeral 2, number 1, little letter A, one in parentheses, no health care would be provided to mentally incompetent people if you were in an accident who that would, as far as you being a productive member of society.
No. If you were in an accident, that's standard health care language across this country. If you're in an accident, if you've got health care right now, Brian, your health care will not cover your medical bills if you're in a car accident or something. That is left up to the auto insurance. That's typical. That's not surprising at all.
But work accident, you fall at home and get hurt. It didn't matter. If an accident happened, it didn't say vehicle accident. You fall off your roof, you're putting the star on the Christmas tree and fall over and break your neck. You're not going to be a productive member of society? No. You were not afforded health care. Elderly were not afforded health care. It was there. It was in it. I held it in my hands and read it.
Thank
the good Lord that it didn't pass.
I'll have to go back and read it. Yeah, thank the good Lord it didn't pass, Brian, because it's better that people should have no health care than some sort of health care, right? How many more?
The health care is still there, Bob.
How many more million people have to be without health care in this country before we realize that we have a genuine crisis?
There is a problem with health care in this country. I will grant that, but there are alternatives that are available.
We spend the insurance companies spend in excess of 30% of all health care dollars just trying to figure out how to shift the cost to some other entity, as opposed to the cost of providing health care.
Well, I think it's a shame the money that's ended up spending administrative costs and what the CEOs of any business are paid. The airlines, I don't care who it is, top dog, there's no man worth $15 million a year.
No, there's not.
You could be CEO of Microsoft. You say, fellas, I think we need to lower the price of Windows by $25 a unit. And the board says, well, no, we can't do that. And profits don't increase the next quarter. All you have to do is go on TV and say, see, I told them we needed to lower the price of Windows, and they didn't do it. And your praises are saying, you're a great, wonderful, top-notch CEO. You had an idea the board did not elect to do.
Do you know how much each member, do you know how much each of the Sam Walton heirs are worth, Brian?
I don't know where they're at. Something
on the order of $24 billion each.
Wouldn't that be nice if they get that check? it would be great if they were paying taxes on it. It all wasn't coming to them as dividends, and they didn't have to pay taxes on it.
There are billionaires in this country who have so much money in offshore accounts, offshore tax dodges, that the amount in the tax dodges exceeds the gross domestic product of the United Kingdom.
Right. I've said for a while that we need to make some changes and eliminate some of the loopholes. We don't need to tax the rich more. We just need to eliminate the loopholes that are there.
Well, look, Brian, consider this, if you will. During the economic boom of the Eisenhower administration, just as an example, corporate America paid, booming, going great guns, an economy on fire. Corporations paid something on the order of 60% of the total tax burden of the nation, if I recall what I read correctly, and ordinary middle class Americans paid significantly less. That number is now for corporations pay 16% of the federal tax burden. Guess who picks up the slack?
I'm sure it's working class America.
You do. I do.
I mean, there's no doubt in my mind on that. There are revisions that need to be made. I do like what Bush said about Social Security as far as the adjustments on the payments that come out. You know, the rich don't get paid what, the lower income people do.
Well, see, the sad thing is that's how you interpreted that. What he actually said was that the middle class doesn't get paid the same as but then again, it's still blue smoke and mirrors, Brian, because what he's not talking about paying the dirt poor any more than they're already getting. He's talking about paying other people less. You know, if we were, I would be applauding him if he was doing what I have been talking about. Why are we talking about trying to keep benefits the same and raising the retirement age to say 70? Why, you know, in a country that was actually focused on mercy and justice, Brian, we would be talking about trying to figure out a way to lower the retirement age and up the benefits.
Well, one thing I think that we could do that would prove to be a help, I mean, it would have to vary. You couldn't arbitrarily say, okay, if you make $10,000 a month on retirement from investments or other income or what have you, that, what, 10 grand here in West Virginia, 120,000 a year, that's not bad money. Retirement, assuming your house is paid for, your vehicle's paid for, you know, that here, that would be good money. Assuming New York, I doubt if it would be.
Well, but there are problems deeper than that. I don't know if you were listening the other night when we were talking about the Medicaid issue.
No, I wasn't. I've been working on stuff here at the house.
Well, I've heard Dr. Bill mention it too. There are older Americans now who are mortgaging their homes at the fairly high interest rate loans and living on that in anticipation of eventually winding up in a nursing home, thereby leaving, you know, they have no estate. They're intentionally depleting their estate so that they will be able to get Medicaid. By the same token, while we protect the estates of the very wealthy with this estate tax elimination, on the other hand, we're trying to figure out ways to make it harder for Granny to leave her farm to her kid for taking care of her when she goes into the nursing home. Well, this is a country that is running bass-ackwards right now, Brian, and I think you recognize that.
Well, I mean, I see things where there are, but where I was talking about the, you know, depending on, I mean, one thing that could help cure the Social Security thing, I'm glad that Daddy Bush can donate his Social Security check each month to a suitable charity. I think it's great that he has enough money that he doesn't need it and can give that check away. But if you have that kind of money, why even draw it to begin with?
Well, I understand that.
If I had that kind of money, I wouldn't take it. I don't want Social Security. I don't need it. Let's give it to people that need it. We can reform it. I mean, personally, at 36, I like the idea of being able to take 2% of my money and it be invested privately.
We've done this before, Brian. They're gonna hoodoo you right into the ground if they've got you thinking 2% of your money. You're talking about a third of your money in the system. It's not 2% of the money in the system. It's a third of the money in the system because
well,
it's 2%.
Well, I pay 6.5. Employer pays 6.5.
Right. So it's 2% out of 6 that you pay. So that's 1/3.
Well, the employer's money is still going in, so it's actually 2%.
Right, and if you...
It's not a third, it's a third of my portion.
Right, it's a third of your
contribution. But paying in the full 6.5%.
But it's a third of your contribution. That 2% makes it sound like it's little bitty and there's nothing to it. But what you've got to realize is, I don't care what George Bush said last night, the administrative costs for those private accounts, those privatized accounts, the administrative costs are going to be a lot more than the 0.6% that it is Social Security. And
oh,
in the,
come on. The government has never done anything at 0.6%.
That is the administrative cost of Social Security, Brian, 0.6%.
I don't believe that number.
Well,
I'm calling you a liar, but I don't believe that number.
Well,
the government has never
it is one
in
of
the history
it is the
of
one,
government
yes,
that good.
Yes, it has, and that's why Social Security is a beacon unto the world, because it is extremely well administered, and it's a little miracle. okay? The system itself is. And, you know, Britain has a privatized Social Security system now. Guess what their administrative costs are?
I have no idea.
It's on the order of 30%, and that's where your 2% is going to go, Brian. We got to roll, man. Have a great weekend.
You too, bud.
Later. Okay, time for our bottom of the hour break. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. A former Mercer County teacher pleaded guilty Thursday to sex-related charges involving former students. Danny Perkins of Kegley entered a plea to two counts of third-degree sexual assault, two counts of sexual abuse by a custodian, and one count of displaying obscene material to a minor. In return, the state agreed to dismiss 16 other charges against Perkins. A McDowell County man has been convicted of first-degree murder in connection with the death of a Gary woman. Thomas Joseph McPhee of Hensley was also found guilty on charges of grand larceny and conspiracy to commit murder in connection with the death of Lori Ann Keaton. Keaton was reported missing by her husband in 2003. A large crowd is expected for the turnout tonight at the Beckley-Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce dinner at the Armory. The 85th annual dinner will highlight chamber activities and honor individual and business award winners. The ribbon will be cut on a new fashion store in Beckley this morning. Marisa's in the Cranberry Creek Plaza held the grand opening this morning at around 10 o'clock. The young men's and women's fashion store features a wide array of clothing styles from everyday and casual to special occasion. Also offers women an expanded choice of sizes from extra small to extra extra large. And tourism will be the main focus at the Crossroads Mall this weekend. The mall and the Southern West Virginia Convention and Visitors Bureau will host the second Southern West Virginia Travel Expo tomorrow and Sunday. The event showcases attractions and tourism-related business from the nine-county region served by the Bureau. SWVCB CEO and President Doug Matty says they remind area residents about all the great tourism attractions that are close home. Representatives from the lodging and outdoor recreation industries are also expected to attend this weekend's expo. That's the news. Now here's the forecast for tonight. Showers likely, a chance of thunderstorms this evening. Not as cool tonight with a low around 50. Then for Saturday, showers, thunderstorms likely in the morning. Returning in the afternoon, a little bit warmer tomorrow. Saturday's high near 60. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
Washington has a message for you. No. No on health care, college education, job training, food stamps, veterans benefits, etc. All of these programs and many more that meet basic needs of the American people are being sacrificed on the holy altar of budget cuts. America has many crying needs, our congressional leaders acknowledge, but the money has run out, so forget it. Go away. No. Besides, say our Congress critters, we're giving you the C-130J, so stop whining and be grateful for what you're getting. The what? The C-130J is supposed to be a massive new whiz-bang of a cargo plane for the Air Force, but it's really a massive boondoggle for the Lockheed Martin Corporation, which makes the thing. The plane has flaws. So many flaws that it cannot fly its intended combat missions. For example, it can't drop heavy equipment, which, hello, is a cargo plane's purpose. Also, it doesn't perform in cold weather, nor does it have the range to reach global hotspots where it would be needed. And its engines tend to stall out on takeoff. Plus, one more little thing, paratroopers can't jump out of it because the plane's design causes them to be pulled back and crash into the fuselage. The Pentagon has already bought 50 of these things for $2.6 billion. None are in combat. Instead, they're mostly sitting idle on various U.S. military bases. It's such a boondoggle that even Pentagon Chief Donnie Rumsfeld wants to stop production. Yet Lockheed lobbyists and the Air Force brass have been swarming Congress, which is about to give them another $5 billion to buy more C-130Js. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's your money. That's your health care, job training, education, and other real needs being squandered on pieces of worthless military junk. It's bad enough that Congress throws so much of our money at the war machine, but shouldn't we at least get back planes that work?
Message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. Libraries need your help. They are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. That's your library. So make sure your library has a future. This is your supper. Come on back.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.kla.org.
Brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they're working for you. Now, Bob Kincaid.
Do not panic. It is not 7 o'clock. This is not a time warp. Sometimes we do things just to make sure you're staying awake. Dadgummit. I left an email sitting in there. Jesse, could you help me with that, please? Otherwise, we'll have to have dead air. Last night, you know, and this is something that President Embarrassment has been doing on his little 60-day whirlwind taxpayer-funded ripoff tour, talking about how I want you to be able to have your own private account. You know, Congress has got a private account. Yeah, he made it sound like Congress doesn't pay into Social Security. They do. And they've got the private account in addition to Social Security. That's the way it works throughout almost all of America. And JJ touched on this in his email. Subject, the whole private account thing. I could have sworn 401k and IRA accounts have been around for a while. Hello? We already have private retirement account options. Yeesh. Somebody smack the government and tell them to come up with something new. Not every company may offer a 401k, but anyone can go to their bank and open an IRA. Oh, yeah, there's IRAs, there's Roth IRAs, there's Kentucky Fried IRAs, there's all kinds of IRAs. And, you know, if you've got enough money to be part of the investor class, play the Wall Street roulette wheel. Fine. Jesse. Think quick. And they just, they just lie.
Well, Congress has private accounts, and you should have a private account. And
you know, again, there's an unspoken implication there that, well, they're not paying into Social Security because they know Social Security's no good. And my God, he, you know, last night he did the whole worthless IOU thing again. And it just makes you cringe because, you know, even though he doesn't do it every so often, when Dear Leader comes out for a press conference, with about the same regularity as an old premier of the Soviet Union, the world watches. The world wonders. And it's just, there's no trust fund. There's just a bunch of IOUs. And in China, you know, some... Oh, you'll go find Honorable Chairman Bush Monkey saying Treasury bills worthless IOUs again. Maybe time to unload their bad paper, huh? No, I'm not being...
These people just say things with no consideration whatsoever for the impact that it has on the world. Now, you might like not... We might not like to consider it, but the fact is we are a debtor nation. We are not a creditor nation. We are a debtor nation. We are in hock. We're getting ready to run West Virginia's credit card debt through the roof with this bond issue boondoggle in June. And, of course, if you ponder, and ponderous it is, if you ponder the deficit, we have allowed this Republican Congress and this Republican president to go on an absolute bender. Woohoo! Pass that tequila bottle again. We forgot to go get the lemons and salt. See if you can get them on credit. We're on a bender. We are. I mean, a surefire commode-hugging drunk bender. And there are very few people out there that want to slow it down. There are things we need. If we would save this nation, we'd better start saving it now. Part of that might be, a revamped railroad infrastructure. From time to time, I mention ApolloAlliance.org. Go there. Have a look. The 3 million jobs virtually overnight if we could fund this thing. For revamped infrastructure and rapid rail. Cut our fuel dependence on the Saudis. But we don't want to do that. We want more SUVs. Lord God, Billy Bob. So there's none of that in the new energy bill. There's none of that in the there's none of that in the Bush budget. But we do have time for little hand-holding escapades with Saudi princes. Oh, by the way, this from Boo Boo. This story was on CNN. It really disgusts me. This guy should spend a long time in a Florida correctional facility being Bubba's best girl. However, Bush will probably intervene on his half. Perhaps he can become W's best girl. Sickening. Miami Beach police said a tip from an organization that monitors child pornography on the Internet led them to arrest the son of a high-ranking Saudi official. Tuesday, investigators arrested 23-year-old Muhammad Abdullah Al-Gharni of 5601 Collins Avenue, Miami Beach. Police said Al-Gharni is charged with 50 counts of computer pornography and 50 counts of sexual performance by a child. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children contacted police in February about child pornography being exchanged by an America Online user. Investigators used subpoenas to identify Al-Gharni as the user. The police report indicated that Al-Gharni, who told the police he is the son of a high-ranking official, is in the United States legally as a student. Guess what? He won't be touched. Diplomatic immunity. Friends of the president. A phone call from Bandar Bush to Boy George, and another exploiter of little children will walk merrily away down in Jebby Bush's Florida. I don't like the exploiters of little children. I don't like the rapists of little children. I don't like the abusers of little children. I want them to go to prison for a long, long time and have done to them what they have done to those little children. Al-Gharni, Saudi. Our Saudi friends. Our Saudi friends.
our Saudi friends who sent 15 Saudis in aircraft into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Our Saudi friends who have one of the last, most dictatorial, absolute monarchies on the planet, and who abuse and exploit their people on a daily basis, who have a poor class in their own country that would break your heart to contemplate. Our Saudi friends who come to this country and get their jollies by looking at pictures of children having sex. Our Saudi friends. Boo-boo's right. This guy will walk. He'll skate. Oh, he might have to go home to Saudi Arabia. But there he can probably just do the same thing in the privacy of his own home. 50 counts of computer pornography, 50 counts of sexual performance by a child. Has the Family Research Council mounted a picket outside this guy's house at 5601 Collins Avenue, Miami Beach, yet? Has James Dobson of Focus on the Family found his way to 5601 Collins Avenue, Miami Beach, Florida, yet? Has Jerry Falwell found his way to 5601 Collins Avenue, Miami Beach, yet? Where's William Donahue of the Catholic Citizens League, or whatever the name of that organ? Where is he? Pity this guy is not a Roman Catholic priest. Cardinal Rat already has a letter to cover that. Do not expose the abuse of the child until 10 years past the 18th birthday of the child. And if you do, you will be excommunicated. Too bad for Al Garney. Where is the right to life movement on this one? Hear the crickets? Nowhere to be found. They are nowhere to be found. You will not hear a peep out of them about this because they are crass, hateful, monstrous religion industrialists, and little children getting raped means nothing to them. Unless, of course, the little child gets pregnant and then they have to carry the baby to term. Because the product of kiddie rape must always be born. These people are disgusting. This Saudi is disgusting. The Family Research Council has more in common with Mr. Al Garney than they might otherwise imagine. They could sit down over coffee and find that they agreed on a whole lot of religious tenets. The position of women in society, the attitudes toward children. I'm an environmentalist, and I fret a lot about the poisons that are in our waters and in our air and in our earth and in our bodies. And yet, I forget sometimes that you can hardly turn the television on after the November elections without seeing the poison that is oozing and festering and pus-like spreading all over the American body politic. From these right-wing religion industry evangelo-fascists that kill children, they rape children, they destroy hopes and dreams, and yet the liberal media persists in calling them Christian. Pure, unmitigated poison. And they tell us that they go out and they threaten to have judges killed. And then they tell us that they are being persecuted. A vast bulk of decisional law from the Supreme Court on down. It does nothing but bend over backwards to ensure religious liberty in this country. And it's still not good enough because they don't have absolute control yet. God knows they want it, but they don't yet have it. Justice Sunday, Justice Sunday. When hypocrites stood hand in hand to declare that they were being persecuted because there were only 205 fascists approved for the court system instead of 215. If you were one of those 205 that had already been confirmed to the bench, how would you feel to hear the religion industry stand up and say that people of faith were being persecuted and kept off of the bench because of their faith? Isn't that pretty much a slap in the face at the other 205 who have been confirmed and they're Bush appointments? Not like they're Clinton leftovers or something. They're Bush appointments. They could not get the nomination without bowing and scraping to the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers and the strychnine drinkers and the serpent handlers of the religion industry, right? They couldn't get that, but now the religion industry, right, stands up and says, these 10 are the ones that count. The rest are pagans. How would you feel if you were one of those 205? Well, you wouldn't feel much of anything, because you're part of that agenda, too. You're part of the right-wing religion industry movement that is nothing short of the greatest, most serious, full-bore assault on our constitutional form of government that this country has ever faced. But they're the ones who are being persecuted. The Christian Identity Movement literally advocates the execution of homosexuals and virtually anyone who doesn't believe the way they do. But they're the ones who are being persecuted. My God in heaven. Now, you want to hear the difference between a Christian and a religion industry right-wing freak? Martin Luther King relied upon the tenets of the Christianity which he embraced and in which he firmly believed. When he led the civil rights movement, he embraced and believed in those religious tenets when he sat in the jail in Birmingham and wrote the letter from Birmingham jail. What was his name? Father Berrigan. Something on the order of 11 years in lockdown he spent for leading the draft resistance movement in the Vietnam War. Because of his faith, because of what he believed in, and because of the religion that he embraced and which embraced him, and the morals and the principles which they had, those men did what they did and suffered what they suffered all the way to martyrdom for Dr. King. And they were persecuted for their religious beliefs. Yet not once did Dr. King or Father Berrigan ever say, "Help me, I'm being persecuted for my religious beliefs." On the other hand, you've got a gang of fascists who want nothing more than to destroy the very fabric of the Constitution, and they are running up and down America awash in their millions and billions of dollars, advocating the murder of people who they don't agree with them, and at the same time having the unmitigated, less shame than a streetwalker, crying out, "We're being persecuted for our religious beliefs."
Bug spray. You're not being persecuted.
You have chosen to engage in the blood sport that is American politics. And you are not willing to be criticized because you seek to hide behind the cross. It may work with others. It doesn't work with me. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Freshman is supposed to be tough, but let me tell you about my schedule this semester. All 18 credits. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I have American Lit at 8:05 a.m., and then I only have 15 minutes to get to my 9:15 Ethics and Value Theory class all the way across campus, then in the afternoon, Calculus 1. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have two lectures that go through lunch, Sociology of Families, then Intro to Microbiology, pre-med, and finally, I have a double lab that ends around 9 p.m. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you.
If a kid will do whatever it takes to get through college, what will you do to send her there? Please support the United Negro College Fund and call 1-800-332-UNCF. Because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
You two are real actors, huh?
And you're going to play our parents for how long?
Oh, just during dinner for the next few years.
There's no substitute for a loving parent. And when you're really there, they'll know how much you care.
According to the script, we're supposed to ask you how your day was.
Okay, I guess.
Oh, is that the best you can do?
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history. The Bedtime. Talk 620. WWNR. Beckley. It's 9 o'clock.
Instead of adding to his tie collection, invite Dad to become your fitness partner on Father's Day. Scientific studies show that staying physically active and exercising regularly can help prevent or delay some diseases and conditions as people grow older. Dr. Richard Hodes, director of the National Institute on Aging, says,
it was not very long ago that in general people had the sense that as men and women grew older, they became frail, and as a result, it was actually dangerous to exercise. And common advice was just to rest, take it easy, and not take the chance of exercise that might endanger health or cause injury. However, over the past years, we've learned a great deal and learned that the best advice is quite to the contrary, that exercise, when properly conducted, can be extremely important in preserving health in older men and women.
For more information on exercising, call 1-800-222-2225. To receive the NIA Exercise Guide. This is Calvin Jackson, the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
Shining a liberal light in the conservative darkness, Bob Kincaid.
Head on. Welcome back. 6 minutes after 9 o'clock. The final hour of the final day of the final week of April. Remember, May Day is Sunday. That's also National Law Day. Celebrate your Constitution on Sunday. Maybe sit down and read it on Sunday. Because while a lot of people hate lawyers, we wouldn't have our Constitution if it were not for them. And it's a pretty brilliant document. And I know the right-wing religion industry freaks are upset about it. But you can't get around the fact that there is no mention of God in that document. And a quick, let's go to the phones. Ed's been waiting. Hey, Ed, you're head on. Ed.
Yes, Bob, how you doing?
Doing good.
Sounds like you're still holding it down, but I've got some, you know, these people that call in here trying to justify George Bush and his tactics. I'm going to read them something in a minute here, but if you've got a few minutes for me to read it.
Oh, go right ahead.
I like from the Idiot's Corner, I want to give you some stuff here that some of them quote. We just can't lose with Bush's plan on Social Security.
Oh, my God. Who said that?
Guess who?
Oh, never mind.
Wendy. But my question is why does he attack everybody but business? I mean, these programs, like Social Security, were set up, and the money is supposed to be there for us, but I'd like to know, too, who is the president that spent the most money out of Social Security? And then, why are they still doing it, and why do they still want to do it and borrow money to penalize us more? I just don't understand the reasoning at all. There is no reasoning there. The idea, in my opinion, is to break Social Security.
Well, that's this president's idea. He despises it, and there is historical proof that he has despised it all of his life. When he was an MBA student at Harvard, God knows how he got in, God only knows, he sat there and argued with his professor that Social Security was communism.
Yes.
When he ran for Congress in 1978, he said Social Security will be broke by the end of the 80s, and it's communism.
Well, why don't, you know, this is not a critical or a crisis on Social Security in his term. Why don't they just leave it alone until they get someone in there that's got enough brains that ain't broke all the companies that they've ever been associated with? Why is this so critical right now? You know why? In my opinion, it's the perfect time. They've got control of the Congress and all to punish the worker some more. And another thing, it's not costing them a dime. Why are they so opposed to Social Security, Bob? Is my question. Why are they against something that's not going to affect them either way?
Well, the answer to the one question is they hate Social Security because they have hated it since its inception, because it represents money that they think they could have that's being kept from them.
Give it to these buddies on Wall Street.
Bingo.
But let me read you some stuff here if you've got about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Accomplish. This is some of his accomplishments. Change pollution laws. Now, you know, they do so much. Let me make this statement first. They do so much and so regular and so many different things that you can't keep up with all of them. But I got a list of stuff here and see how these Republicans respond to this. Change pollution laws. Power and petroleum companies made Texas the most polluted state of the union. Set record for most executions by any governor in history. Attack and took over two countries. Spent the surplus and bankrupted the treasury. Shattered record for the biggest annual deficit in history. Set economic record for most private bankruptcies filed in any 12 months. Set all-time record for biggest drop in the history of the stock market. First president in the U.S. to enter office with a criminal record.
Yep.
You said that again. A criminal record.
Yep.
First year in office, set an all-time record for most days on vacation of any president in history. In my first 2 years in office, over 2 million Americans lost their jobs. Cut unemployment benefits for more out-of-work Americans than any president in U.S. history. Set all-time record for most foreclosures in 12-month period. Appointed convicted criminals to administrative positions than any president in U.S. history. Signed more laws and executive orders amending Constitution than any president in U.S. history. Presided over the biggest energy crisis in the U.S. history and refused to intervene on the corporations that were involved in it. Let me turn this page here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having trouble getting these pages apart. That's all right. About.
That's all right.
The highest gasoline prices in the history and refused to use national reserve as past presidents have. Cut health care benefits for war veterans. Set all-time record for most people worldwide to simultaneously take to the streets to protest me. 15 million people shattered the record of protest against any person in the history of mankind. These are my presidency, the most that doesn't apply now, I don't think. Members, I see, first president in U.S. history to have all 50 states of the Union simultaneously go bankrupt. Presided over the biggest corporation stock market fraud of any market in the country in the history of the world. First president in U.S. history to order a U.S. attack and military on an occupation of a sovereign nation. Set all-time record for the biggest annual budget spending increases more than any president in the history. First president in the history to have United Nations remove the U.S. from Human Rights Commission. Rendered the entire nation irrelevant. Withdrew from the World Court of Law. All-time U.S. and world record holder for most corporate campaign donations. And he says, my biggest lifetime campaign contributor presided over the largest corporate bankruptcy fraud in the world history. Kenneth Olay, former CEO of Enron Corporation.
Yeah, it's a stunning list, Ed. And yet, you know, you tell that to a Bush voter, and they just blithely say, "That's all right. He's a Christian."
Yeah. Well, you know, I've got another page of it. It's just as bad as what I read. But like I said, this is not a wrongdoing. I mean, it's accepted, and it's like the one guy, the regular guy from Idiot Corner said, we just can't lose. No, Bush hasn't been a loser, has he?
Oh, no.
His word has really been upheld by his actions.
He's pure success. But you know what? Maybe the lights are going on, Ed. I've got results here from an online poll. That's just an AOL online poll. That was put up after his little dog and pony show last night. How satisfied are you with what Bush said during his press conference? Not at all, 65%. Okay. How would you rate Bush's overall job performance? Poor, 58%. Only 21% said excellent, 11% said good, 9% said fair. So 58% to 41%. Poor. 58%. How satisfied were you with what Bush said during his press conference? Not at all. 65%.
You know what I think of his performance? I didn't even listen to him. It was on in my house, and it was because it come on the station that when I left that room, it was on. But you know what I think of it? It's just another stinking lie. You know,
well, it was a long string of them.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what I think of him. And, you know, the people that cannot see that, I don't say they're all stupid Republicans, just part of them.
Right.
But the rest of them just want to believe in somebody. They want to have a hero. They want to have a decent guy. And who better than a president? But who better than a George Bush for a total liar and a failure?
Well, when I almost ran screaming around the room last night, Ed, when he said, I believe that what's good enough for Congress is good enough for the workers. He was talking about private accounts. And as I noted at the time, I guess that doesn't count if you're talking about health care, though.
That's exactly what I was going to say when you started that. How about health care? How about the all the protections that the protections that they have against any of the things that occur in life?
Yeah, how about a real pension?
Yeah.
Instead of one of these Wall Street schemes.
And you know what, Bob? They give us this thing, this IRAs or whatever, but that's a joke. You're not going to get all of that. You know, you're going to pay for that one way or the other,
well,
sooner or later.
Yeah, and there's taxes and everything, but you know what? An IRA is not a bad idea as long as it's a sort of a protected environment. Ed, we got to roll. Have yourself a great weekend, all right?
All right, and thank you, Bob.
Take care now.
Mm-hmm, bye.
Bye. All right, back after the break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
12th Annual Beckley Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce Business Show with over 75 business exhibits on display. Find out what businesses have to offer in Beckley Raleigh County. Network with area business representatives and take advantage of many business show special offers. Free admission, free parking, door prize drawings, exhibitor drawings and giveaways. Thursday, May 5th, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. Support the Beckley Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce members. They support your community. For more information, call 252-7328.
When you think of a murdered woman, who's the murderer? A man lurking in the shadows? A psychopath? A stranger? How about a husband? A boyfriend? A lover? The fact is, one-third of all female murder victims are killed by their intimate partners. In 69% of these cases, the murder weapon is a gun. These killings don't come out of the blue. They're usually the end of a long story of violent domestic abuse. Yet there's no telling which man will keep on punching and kicking, and which man will use a gun. That's why, under federal law, anyone convicted of domestic violence or subject to a domestic violence restraining order can't have a gun. They can't own a gun, they can't borrow a gun, they can't use a gun. If they do, they can go to federal prison. If you or someone you know is being abused, call 1-800-799-SAFE. If you have questions about the federal firearms laws, call 1-800-ATF-GUNS.
This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods.
Hi, I'm Tony Robbins. Listen, I'm not usually lost for words, but when you're trying to find the right words of encouragement for a loved one living with cancer, I can leave anyone speechless. Fortunately, through TalkingWellness.org, you can send e-cards that offer messages of hope and empowerment, words that can speak for you when it's hard to find the right thing to say. For inspirational e-cards and information about cancer and coping with the side effects of treatment, visit TalkingWellness.org. That's TalkingWellness.org.
Sponsored by the Wellness Community with support from Merck.
Here's Bob Kincaid, Head On.
Welcome back. 21 minutes after 9 at beautiful uptown Beckley, the studios of WWNR. I'm Bob Kincaid. Straight back to the phones. Christina is with us. Hey, Christina.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm fine. We're discussing George Bush and what he talked about last night about his proposals for the new Social Security program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I know he wants to dismantle something that Franklin Delano Roosevelt, you know, it has been such a successful program and such a necessary program, he'd love to see people lose the benefits. Could he also be going around the country talking up the Social Security proposals for diversion from the war?
Oh, of course.
I mean, he really knows that we're getting ticked off now. Pictures on TV now of images of people coming home in caskets, just as it was in Vietnam. I know he almost at some point must think that this may not pass, you know?
Well,
making a lot of Republican congressmen are getting a lot of heat from their constituents.
But you got to remember, Christina, there was an email that was exposed, caught out three or four months ago, in which a leading Republican so-called thinker said, now is the time. This is the best time opportunity we have ever had to destroy
It'll
Social
never
Security.
Happen again. Yeah.
And, you know, now is the time to strike.
Right.
Because, it's worth remembering, it's just history, but when Social Security was passed by the Congress, it passed without a single Republican vote on either side, the House or the Senate. Not one Republican voted for it.
Well, and they, I can't believe that.
And they hated it then. They taught their sons to hate it. Their sons taught their grandsons to hate it. Their grandsons have taught their great-grandsons to hate it. And it is something that has been in their crosshairs for as long as it has existed.
Well, you know, my dad, we're from Massachusetts, as I've said that before.
Mm-hmm.
He was lower, middle class, blue collar factory worker. And he always said, the R on the ballot stands for Republican, and that translates into the rich people. But yeah. I say it's beyond that. It's just avarice and greed. My God, they're so intolerant of people. So what if we get a few bucks? You've worked your whole life. Why not get a little pension? You know, is that going to really put a dent in their wealth? I mean,
but there is no oh, there's a Bible verse that says something like, a man never saith the word enough. I can't remember exactly what it is. But when it comes to money and when it comes to Republicans, there is never such thing as, yeah, there is never such a thing as enough money. And if you have
some, I don't understand it. They're not giving people. I just, and as you say, they profess to be Christians, and it's so sad. I mean, to see us come down, all the gains the Democrats made for the working, actually the middle class is the working class, is the tax-paying class.
Right.
All of these, like the black lung that Ken Heckler co-sponsored in 69, it had such an uphill battle.
Right.
And finally, people, of course, some of the men didn't get the benefits at all, and some got them just before they died, and this is exactly the way they'd rather pay the widow off if they have to pay anybody. And you know, what can that harm if a working class person gets a little bit of a pension? So what? We all pay taxes, you know?
And it's not like people on Social Security, Christina, are socking that money away.
That's right.
They turn that money straight back into the economy.
Yeah, they go down to Sears and buy a refrigerator, which is what I did the other day. You buy necessities, appliances.
Right.
Sometimes, once in a while, you get lucky and get a car that you're going to make a payment on for 5 years, you know.
Right.
It does. It's recycled back into the economy. I don't understand it. And I heard Dr. Bill say one time on his show, if you keep taking away jobs and outsourcing these good union-scale wage jobs to other countries, who is going to buy the products that the companies produce?
Exactly.
And he's so right. It's so simple, but it just hits you right in the face, but people can't see it. I don't trust Republicans. I guess it's not a nice thing to say, but honestly, their motives, I just don't. They've never voted for civil rights. They've never voted for women or anybody, minorities or any working class proposals. I just don't trust them.
Well, how can you?
They don't represent my interests.
No, how could you know? And people criticize me, Christina, because I
don't. I respect you.
But I have said I have never voted for a Republican. And that, well, you know, Bob, you just got your blinders on. You're one of those partisan Democrats. You know, doggone it, Christina. What Republican have I ever seen on a ballot that even remotely shares my interests, my views, and my values? I have never seen one.
Absolutely, won't find one.
No. Because I'm far more interested in the well-being of my family, my fellow man, my friends, trying to raise my children right. I don't have time to be in love with money like
right.
they are.
I just need enough to get by.
Right.
You know, I don't have to be wealthy. I never have been. So, and I've learned how to manage pretty well. Well, as I always tell you, I really do enjoy your show. I learn an awful lot from it, and a lot of other people that don't call in, I'm sure they enjoy it.
Well, I hope they do.
Thank you.
It certainly
you keep up the good work. We
well,
need
I'm
you.
Trying. I'm trying, Christina. Thank you, and you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now. Let's see. Better wait to go to the phones until after the break. I don't like to take somebody in and just say, well, okay, here's your minute. Goodbye. So in the interim, before we do go to our bottom of the hour break, profiles in great Republicans. Tonight, Ira Stern, 56 years old, recent recipient of the 2004 Ronald Reagan Republican Gold Medal from the National Republican Congressional Committee. Recipients were invited to be recognized at a dinner and tax reform workshop in Washington, D.C., March 15th, where George W. Pinhead was the keynote speaker. The awards were given by the National Republican Congressional Committee. They were announced by none other than House Majority Leader Tom DeLay and NRCC Chairman Tom Reynolds of New York to honor business leaders who support the party and honor President Reagan's vision for an entrepreneurial America. And one of those recipients, Ira Stern, 56. He said, Stern did this past Wednesday, that he didn't do much to earn the award. He said, I believe the Congressional Committee gives that to people who supported the Republican Party. I made a very small donation to them, and next thing I know, I'm being nominated for Businessman of the Year. Stern admitted to bilking 14 local businesses and individuals out of a total of more than $600,000 through an advance fee loan scam. He was sentenced to 2.5 to 5 years in prison and ordered to pay $250,000 in restitution after pleading guilty to felony theft charges in 1996 in Hillsborough County Superior Court. As part of his plea bargain, Stern read a 2-page statement in court admitting various aspects of the allegations. He ran the scam through his former company, Venture Capital Consultants, Inc., which operated out of his former homes in Nashua and Hollis. A man convicted of stealing more than $600,000 in a business loan scam received the 2004 Ronald Reagan Republican Gold Medal Award from the National Republican Congressional Committee. It was handed to him by Tom DeLay. That's not a joke. I can't pay people to come up with stuff that ironic. That's just a fact. The National Republican Congressional Committee gives out Ronald Reagan Memorial Gold Medal Republican Award thingies to people who bilk other individuals out of more than $500,000. Hell, it fits, doesn't it? This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. Tourism will be the main focus at Crossroads Mall this weekend. Mall and the Southern West Virginia Convention and Visitors Bureau will host the second Southern West Virginia Travel Expo tomorrow and Sunday. The event showcases attractions and also tourism-related business from the 9-county area served by the Bureau. The Bureau's president, Doug Maddie, says they remind area residents about all the great tourist attractions that are close to home.
We've got a lot of things to do in our region that unfortunately those of us that live here sometimes overlook. And this will showcase what there is to do, how to plan your vacation locally, and help also to promote the Crossroads Mall, obviously. And it's an awareness campaign, if anything else.
Representatives from the lodging and outdoor recreation industries are expected at the weekend expo. Mall traffic during the expo weekend is expected to be about 33,000 people. Goal for the expo is to give local residents information to share with friends, family, or business acquaintances who may be coming to Southern West Virginia this year. There won't be any motorcycle riding for a while for Governor Manchin. The governor recently underwent outpatient surgery to correct a hernia. He was back at the Manchin 4 hours later and appears well on his way to full recovery, but doctors told him to stay off the motorcycle for 4 to 6 weeks. Manchin's press secretary, Tom Hunter, says he's frustrated because it's spring and he's ready to get riding again. The doctor's orders mean that Manchin will be grounded through May, possibly all the way through Memorial Day. Humane officials have confirmed a second case of rabies in Summers County within 6 months. A raccoon found in the west end of town Tuesday tested positive for the disease. Humane officials are urging residents to make sure their pets' rabies vaccinations are up to date and to watch for any animal that acts suspiciously. Rabies is becoming a problem in several counties in southern West Virginia. That's the news. Now here's the forecast. For the rest of this evening, cloudy, showers, possible thunderstorms. During most of the night, as a matter of fact, not quite so cool tonight with a low near 50. Saturday, showers and thunderstorms likely most of the day. Daytime highs near 60. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
Many farm families in the Mid-Atlantic region are putting in their kitchen gardens at this time of the year. And Mother Nature can help home gardeners put kitchen waste to good use. That'll be our focus on today's edition of On the Farm Radio. I'm Jeff Ishii. And we will be getting to our program in just a moment, but first of all, I wanted to tell you about the 2005 Ford Expedition. It's had some full-sized improvements to this full-sized SUV, and now the Expedition is more efficient than ever. Take the 2005 Ford Expedition's 5.4-liter V8 engine. It is the single most fuel-efficient engine ever put to work in an Expedition. That means you'll still get that classic Ford power to pull, tow, or haul whatever you need without sacrificing any fuel efficiency. So bring yourself and half a dozen of your best friends down to a local Ford dealership right now and take the 2005 Ford Expedition out for a spin. You'll like how this full-sized SUV handles like a sports car, but it can still handle seating for seven. Experience the Expedition today, only at your local Ford dealership. You'll understand why Ford vehicles are the official vehicle of On the Farm Radio. Well, many farm families in the eastern United States are putting in their kitchen gardens at this time of the year, and one official at the University of Georgia says compost can save you a lot of money. Let's get this report from John Harrell.
Many people remember their parents or grandparents putting grass clippings or leaves in a compost pile. They also included vegetable hulls or fruit waste from inside the house. George Boyhan, a horticulturist with the University of Georgia Extension Service, says compost uses microorganisms to decompose organic matter and turn it into soil amendments full of nutrients.
One of the first things is it is a source of nutrients for plants. There's lots of the nutrients that they need to make plants grow. It also has the ability to hold nutrients in the soil near plant root. It makes any additional fertilizer that you might add act more efficiently and tends to hold it in place better.
George Boyhan with the College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences, who adds, compost also has the ability to hold water, so home gardeners get additional help from composting by saving money on fertilizer and water bills. John Hill, University of Georgia, College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences, reporting from Tifton.
Thank you, John, for that report provided as a service of the University of Georgia. We have a pearl of wisdom today that comes in by postcard from listener Una Wilkins. Una Wilkins says, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. Thanks to Una Wilkins for that pearl of wisdom. You're on the farm, and I'm Ish.
He's got the heart of a conservative, pickled on a jar on his desk. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed I am, and it's about 23 minutes and change before 10 o'clock, 23 minutes left of your thoughts, if you want to share them, before you have to go silent for the weekend.
The weekend.
Yeah, but I got if the weather will give me a little bit of a break, it should be kind of fun tomorrow. We got Little League opening day, and then we've got 12th night at Tamarack tomorrow night. Should be fun. Should really be fun. And I do like to provide a public service with this program, so do remember, if you want to win the Ronald Reagan Republican Gold Medal Award from the Republican Congressional Committee, your best bet is to follow in the steps of 56-year-old Ira Stern and rip off people to the tune of about $600,000. That will get the attention of the Republican Party, and it will not only get their attention, it will get their admiration. The phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. Kyle's with us. Hey, Kyle, you're head on.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
caught me off a little bit there on the delay. How you doing?
Nah, I'm doing pretty good. I hope we get some decent weather for tomorrow's baseball opener.
You know, I was thinking about you earlier. I thought, you know, what was it, a week ago? We were talking about the pretty weather and how warm and, you know, everything's blooming and... And of course, you know, April showers bring May flowers.
Yeah, April is.
So we should have one hell of a May.
I hope so. I'm about tired of this, Kyle.
Yeah.
I want to get some plants in the ground.
Yeah, gardening's not. It's not. I'll tell you, it's rough.
I want my wilted lettuce and I want my fresh tomatoes.
It's been many years ago. But I remember one spring we had. It was really, really wet. Really, just terrible, awful. My sister and her husband just moved back here from Florida. And then along about mid-May, and man, we were in a drought for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I'm trying longer. I guess it was maybe May of '89. I thought I was going to scream. I was in school, and it snowed on May 1st in Morgantown, and I did. I stood outside the building and just howled. I know getting mad at the weather is kind of pointless, but you know, snow on May 1st.
Well, you know, we had snow last Sunday.
Yeah.
And one of the drivers was telling me the other night, it was one night this past week we had sleet.
Oh, it wasn't so much
here. A couple of nights ago.
Where I live, Kyle, Sunday morning I woke up and there was 5 inches of snow on the ground.
This past week?
Yeah, last Sunday, man.
Are you serious?
Yeah, me and Carl Mack got buried.
Good gosh.
And then Monday morning, another dusty, you know, it was, in both instances, it was gone by noon. But, yeah, I mean, the roads were glazed, and I just sat there looking out the window going, oh, I'm just so glad I didn't plant anything.
Wow.
You know, because, you know, those eager beaver gardeners and the Johnny-on-the-spot types that are so good and conscientious and get everything out according to the almanac and the signs and whatnot and hoofraw, you know, they get to replant now. Not me. I only buy them once.
Well, that's rough, I'll tell you. I've not got to hear a lot of the show. I've been watching qualifying on TV. Oh, they're, by the way, they're in Alabama this weekend.
Oh, Talladega?
Yeah.
I have been there. I've been there for that, and it is an awesome spectacle.
Yeah, they were talking about the Alabama-Auburn rivalry.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing like it.
And, as you know, I have Alabama ties, and...
Are they Alabama Alabama ties, or are they Auburn Alabama ties?
She's Alabama Alabama ties.
Okay, well that okay. You're amongst the faithful then.
They're racing in EA this weekend, Eastern Alabama.
Yeah, EA. Yeah.
As opposed to LA, which is Lower Alabama.
Yeah, where I like to go. Yeah, I talked to my sister. She lives in Mobile, and she said that my beloved Gulf Shores are still just destroyed. From the last hurricane, because the insurance companies won't pony up the money to pay to rebuild.
Oh well,
I hate that.
I want to change the subject.
Go ahead.
I want to talk sports.
Okay.
As you know, I'm a big NASCAR fan. Of course, you know, and I'm proud to say that I'm on the sports club on Wednesday evenings, and I do.
I've heard you. You do a pretty good job too.
Well, thank you. Pretty good. I like great, but pretty good. That ranks.
Well, I can't. I have a hard time because you know. I mean, if you. It's the subject, you know. I don't get it.
Well, after all, I'm a Republican.
Well, that's okay. yeah, that's right. It came with your membership card.
You're a WVU graduate.
Yeah.
And there was some breaking news today in sports.
Was it really?
Yeah. You know, they're trying to redo this thing now on this West Virginia Marshall
right.
football thing.
Right.
And the Marshall president came out today and proposed, okay, here's what we do. We move into a 3-year deal. We play 1 year at Morgantown, the next year at Huntington, and then the third year we play at Morgantown again. And then we look at it, summarize it, and see where we want to go with this. Because the reason they've done this, the NCAA has expanded
right,
and allowed
to the 12
now 12 games.
Right.
Right. So anyway. So that's how this all came up again. Now WVU is saying no, make it 3-1. And here's the deal: the Mountaineer Stadium seats what, 55,000?
Oh no, you can wedge in a whole lot more than that now, Kyle.
I'm talking about what the fire marshal will allow.
No, I mean I've been there. I've been there when there were 65,000 in there.
I realize that. Yeah. But
that's pretty much an SRO wedge them in with the crowbar.
That's the listed seating capacity, as opposed to. Marshall Stadium, which is what, 40,000?
Yeah, or thereabouts.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering how you feel about that. What the WVU president is saying, as I said, was we play 3, then 1, then we evaluate.
Right.
And I just wonder where you, as a WVU graduate.
Kyle, the linchpin of this, you mentioned Auburn and Alabama.
Uh-huh.
I grew up as a child with that rivalry. And if you are a college football fan down there, probably a day doesn't go by during the year when someone doesn't say something about that rivalry to you.
Exactly.
It's the same ferocity and passion that's generated with what do they call it out on the West Coast, the Civil War, Oregon and Oregon State. I mean, it's an all-consuming rivalry. I think it would be awesome for this state. And you know, I don't want this, you know, let's play 3, we'll think about it, and then we'll not play. No, it's a natural rivalry. Marshall has moved into Conference USA. It's a legitimate conference. and there's no reason for them not to play every year, because with regularity, West Virginia had a Conference USA opponent. But of course, the Conference USA opponent.
Another place, Cincinnati and Louisville, and
right. And then the most that West Virginia ever entered into with a Conference USA opponent was a 2-for-1 deal. You know, two trips to Morgantown, one trip away. I'd kind of hate to see a home and home between Marshall and West Virginia, just because by going down to Edwards Stadium, doggone it, Kyle, both teams are going to lose money on that. Marshall could make more money coming to Morgantown.
That's why they put the 12th game on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know this, but sorry, folks, but NCAA sports is money.
Sure.
And the reason the NCAA has agreed to give them this 12th game is for the schools to be able to raise more money.
Right.
And that's the thing. Here's what I think, Bob. I got to tell you a real quick Alabama-Auburn story I think you get a kick out of.
Okay.
Here's what I think. I think the governor and the legislator ought to say to both universities, look, you're going to play ball. You guys work it among yourselves. We want a deal. We want it in 2 weeks. You come up with something, and let's do it, and let's get it done.
I have no problem with that.
I don't care, Democrat, Republican, Marshall, grad, the VU grad. Set it down on the table and say, all right, guys, here's the deal. I'm the governor, or whoever would do it. Here's the deal. I mean, by God, Joe Manchin has no trouble firing people, does he?
No, he doesn't.
So then lay it on the line.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, they did that. I think they did that in South Carolina, Kyle, to compel the game between Clemson and USC. Because I have spent a lot of time hammering the legislature for engaging in stupid, foolhardy activities that are hardly worth their time or our money, I'd hate to see them get to that point.
But I'm afraid when that comes to that.
I would far rather just have them have the coaches gently, or the ADs probably more appropriately, pulled aside and said, "Fellas, you're going to make this work, or we're going to embarrass the hell out of you with a resolution in the Senate and the House."
I got to tell you a story. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with our public broadcast TV channel here.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a guy here, and I can't think of his name. He is a Bayou chef.
Oh, Justin Wilson.
There you go.
Love him.
A great story. Auburn's playing Alabama. The stadium is packed. I mean, maximum. Every seat is filled, except for one seat, right on the front row behind one of the team's benches. During the course of the game, a ball is punted, and it goes out of bounds, and it bounces in behind this bench. The official goes over to pick up the ball, and he's standing there, and he's standing right in front of this vacant seat. He looks at the lady and he says, "Ma'am," he says, "I've noticed throughout the ball game, no one has been in this seat." And she said, "Yes, that's true." She said, "That seat belonged to my husband. I'm a widow now." And he said, "Well, ma'am," she says, "Why has no one been sitting? Could you not have given this seat of your husband to a friend of yours and let them use that ticket?" And she said, "Well, yes, I did." She says, "But I gave it to his brother, but he's at his funeral," meaning her husband's funeral. And that's how, you know, I mean, that
yeah.
kind of tells the story. On how,
and it's huge. I mean, it's a rivalry like that is an economic boom. Of course, my memories of Alabama and Auburn. I thought it was the most fun when it was played at the Iron Bowl at Legion Field in Birmingham, a so-called neutral site. And it would be nice if we had a stadium in this state, you know, of that caliber, where we could do it. But you know, it should happen. It would be so good. And right now it just makes it makes both schools look quite petty.
Well, you know, they were talking on the qualifying the seating, one of the announcers from Alabama, I can't remember which one.
Eli Gold?
No, not Jeff Hammond. But anyway, he's from L.A., lower Alabama.
Right.
But anyway, so and he made the comment. They talked about the Bill Elliott Darrell Waltrip rivalry in NASCAR racing. And they said, how does that compare? And he said, fellas, I'm going to tell you right now, there is no rivalry in the world that compares to Auburn, Alabama.
No, there's not.
Nothing. He said, nothing in sports, no rivalry in the world.
Yankees, Red Sox, nah.
That compares to, and you have to know someone from Alabama to really realize.
And the funny thing, the history of it, Kyle, they played several times off and on through the first part of the 20th century, and then about 1935 they played and they quit, or I forget the exact date, but they quit for a couple of decades because Auburn claimed that Alabama had shorted them of something on the order of $8.
You got to be kidding.
No. And I mean, it's...
And that just worsened it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the I'm a sort of an alum of the University of Alabama as well. And no one will refer to Auburn as Auburn. It's that cow college.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And I mean, even to the point where Bear Bryant did that. But I wish people in the state could see what it would be good for our pride.
Well, if you know, I see fire in her eyes when she's talking about Auburn. I mean, that's communism as opposed to Christianity.
And on the day of the game, Kyle, there are little civil wars all over the state. My father favors Auburn. I'm a Capstone guy.
Splits families.
Oh yeah, and
that's what she'll say. She's worse than the Civil War.
And my father torments me by calling my littlest one, my littlest girl, over to him, and I'll see him whispering in her ear, and she'll look at me and go, "Hey, Daddy," and I'll say, "What?" And she'll say, "War Eagle." You know, and it just generates this visceral response. Hey, Kyle, that was fun. I enjoy talking the sports from time to time. You have yourself a great weekend.
You too. Have a great weekend.
All right, see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And Jethro. Hey, Jethro, you're head on. Yo, Jethro.
Yo.
Hey.
What's going on, Bob?
Just kind of winding down toward the weekend.
Right. I'm not surprised that Kyle's a big NASCAR fan.
I honestly don't get it. But I'm not that big of a fan of any kind of racing. But
I'd rather listen to a bowling broadcast over the radio than
And where radio is concerned, you know, I like golf. But, you know, golf on the radio, it doesn't translate.
That'd be better than NASCAR.
Or soccer on the radio. Can't get it. You know, where sports and radio are concerned, I'm convinced that radio is a medium that is made for baseball.
Well, that's one thing I'm disappointed in with the radio stations here in Beckley. There's, you know, you can't get the Super Bowl, you can't get the World Series.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to go to a station in Mullins.
Right.
Down Logan to get that. And I'm thinking, what's up with that, with all the stations they have?
Well, I can tell you on the one hand, if you want to carry NFL or Major League Baseball, it is a howling pain in the butt.
Right. Well, I mean, you know,
and they won't give you any exclusivity, Jethro. I mean, they'll give it to anybody. They'll let anybody have it who wants to pony up the bucks. So, you know, that's part and parcel of it.
Right. Well, the playoffs and the Super Bowl would be nice to have.
Oh, it would. I mean, that's like ESPN radio. You know, you can pick it up out of Charleston some of the time. And that irritates me because I would far rather hear the game than a couple of guys periodically updating the game.
Right. Well, I mean, if it's that expensive, how does a small station down in Mullins or Logan afford this? But then, you know.
It depends. Among other things, it depends on your market size. So it'll be dirt cheap or almost a giveaway in a little teeny tiny market. Whereas the bigger the market gets, the more costly it becomes.
I hear you. Well, let's talk some other stuff. Let's get off that sports.
Okay. Yeah, I don't do it a lot, but, you know.
I hear you. Well, it's the opiate of the masses right now, the new Gladiator stuff. So
sure.
It's a big distraction for many, including Kyle. I mean, you know, he has to go to sports. He can't. Well, let's move on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got the new cabinet approved over in Iraq.
Nothing like having Ahmed Chalabi as your number two.
Right. Plus, he's also the Minister of Oil.
Yep.
How convenient.
I saw an article today by William Rivers Pitt, and he refers to him as King Ratsnake.
Exactly. King Rattlesnake's more like it.
That's true. You know, $346,000 a month we paid that guy to turn us on to Curveball to tell us about the mobile weapons labs behind the palm trees.
Right, plus his drunken nephew or whatever who gave us a bunch of information.
So. Right. And then everything we said to him, he told the Iranians. You know, that's money well spent in my book, Jethro.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't there a legislator blown up or shot or killed something like that over there yesterday or the day before?
Right. And there's been at least one attempt on the president or prime minister or whoever's in charge. So I'm sure they're guarding him like they're doing the guy over in Afghanistan who won't go out of Kabul without a, 100-man guard. So it's, and so Bush, there's no timetable. No timetable for us getting out.
No, wouldn't want to do that. Wouldn't be wise. Wouldn't be prudent.
No, nothing. So we're going to be over there. It's going to cost more money. You know, it's a madness. The Pentagon was finally forced to release some pictures of these coffins
right. Over
a Freedom of Information Act and a lawsuit.
Yeah. So that was on the front page of the Gazette today. The other thing, Jethro, I never got around to mentioning it, but did you see the statement that the, what's his name, Al Jafari? Is he president, prime minister? I can't recall offhand. Did you see the statement he made about a week ago, week and a half ago, about Saddam?
No, I did not. I know they want the Americans out, but...
Well, he said even if the Iraqi court sentences Saddam to death, that because he is a pro-human rights individual and takes his religion very seriously, he will refuse to sign the death warrant.
Hmm.
I'm guessing he's going to get blown up pretty soon.
Yeah. I am, too. I mean, you know, you've got the Italian journalist who they attempted to kill.
Yeah, that report came out today, too. The Italian-American report, and the Italians refused to sign off on it because, basically it just says, well, I'll be danged. We shot that Calipari in the back. Who would have thunk it?
Right. So that was a big cover-up. Plus, I'm sure that this young activist girl who was trying to find out was trying to get some figures on the exact number of civilians that were have been killed and maimed and stuff. I believe that was an inside job too.
Oh, she was killed on the road to the airport. That...
Well, yeah, the airport road is the most dangerous road in Iraq. But just why the so-called insurgents pulled up right beside her vehicle to detonate a bomb. In the convoy.
Yeah.
That's a little suspect.
It really is kind of hard to tell who the bad guys are, isn't it, Jethro, when everybody's wearing little ninja suits with their face covered.
Right. And they're, everybody's bragging about how our troop losses have gone down. I think we're kind of hunkered down, and we're trying to let the Iraqi soldiers go out there and take some of it now, and they're getting it. Because they're the ones who are being killed now, left and right.
Well, they're being rounded up when they come off duty. I mean, you saw what happened in the soccer stadium a week or so ago. They rounded them up, took them to the soccer stadium, blew their brains out, and said, "Let this be a lesson to you."
That's reminiscent of Chile or something, there, isn't it? Where they had the big soccer, all the soccer stadium was turned into a death field there.
Yeah, and it's the same thing the Taliban did. There's no good going to come of this, Jethro.
No good. Then we got the Medicaid cuts, more student loans, more of the poor. You know, if you've got a have and have not class, sooner or later, it happened in Russia and in France, sooner or later the have-nots are going to look around when they're digging through dumpsters and they look around seeing some of these haves driving around their Hummers and they're riding around on their 10-speed bikes. Something's going to happen.
It engenders some real bad feelings, and I hate that.
I hate that, too. And if it's not revolution, the infrastructure and the country is being destroyed piece by piece, being dismantled. Amtrak's going to be cut, and all this air service to the passenger service to these small airports is going to be cut. I think we're ripening ourselves for an attack as well.
We absolutely are. The terrorism report that Condi tried to cover up a couple of days ago, there were four times as many terrorist attacks last year as in the previous years, and yet that pinhead ran around the country saying, "I've made us safer." Oh, yeah. God, I hate a liar, Jeffro.
Yeah, not a one in the United States, so that's what makes the difference.
Right, but, you know, plenty of them killed Americans.
Yeah, well, when you stage the one attack that happened on 9/11 yourself, sure there's not going to be any more in the United States because you let that one happen.
Well, yeah, and we got to remember that we have to protect Osama's privacy. Oh, my God. Hey, Jethro, we got to roll.
Madness, I tell you.
It is madness. Take care. You have a great weekend.
Are you going to be at Tamarack tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think we're going to try to go see, I hope it's not sold out. We're going to go try to see Twelfth Night.